This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello, this is Stuart Harper, and I'm here at the National Astronomy Meeting, and I've been joined with Nick Shimonic. So do you want to tell me about what you do?
Well, I lead a double life, actually. Mm-hmm. I have a full-time day job as a train driver on the London Underground, and I have a very interesting hobby, which is amateur astronomy, which is combined with photography. So I'm an astrophotographer. That's been something that's I've been interested in for over 20 years now. I've been very lucky enough to have been involved with the new technology involved with astrophotography right from the very early days. And we've also been very lucky in the fact that we've been able to travel to some very nice locations abroad, Hawaii, for example, Mauna Kea Observatory, and La Palma in the Canary Islands, to do astrophotography out there as an amateur astronomer. So I've been invited to go out there to use the dark sky facilities, not the actual telescopes themselves. Mm-hmm. So we've been out there 15 or 16 times now to very dark sky sites. But these days, the majority of work that I actually do is from a light-polluted location in Essex. But with the quality of instrumentation that's now available to amateurs, it's possible to get really good results. And, you know, hopefully that will come across in the talk that I'm about to give this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So we'll be comparing modern amateur images with professional images of a couple of decades ago.
What do you use at home then? What is it you've got down in Essex?
Well, it's a very well-equipped observatory, because it's something I've been building towards for the last 20 years. I mean, we've seen this incredible rise in the quality of the instrumentation, not only in terms of cameras, but in terms of telescopes and mounts. These are the three things you need to do astronomy or astrophotography successfully. A camera, and it can be either a CCD camera, which is my camera of choice, a DSLR camera, it's a cheap entry-level system for people starting out and will deliver good results. A telescope of some description. Modern apochromatic refractors are very, very well priced now, mm-hmm. and of exceedingly good quality compared to 10 years ago. And then, of course, there's the mounting system itself, the equatorial mount, which tracks these things in the sky. The sky's moving the whole time. We need to have equipment that will track that. And I've gone for the very best I can afford in that sense, which is a Paramount ME. This is one of the sort of top-level amateur level mounts, and this is great because it's been completely and utterly reliable from day one. It'll point the telescope to where I want it to go, it'll track the telescope with incredible precision, mm-hmm. it'll track the telescope across the sky with incredible precision. So the heart of my system is a Paramount ME equatorial head. Mm-hmm. I'm using a 10-inch Ritchie Crescent telescope for the majority of images. I've also got a small refractor for wide field work, and I use QSI CCD cameras. I've got two of those. One is a average size chip, medium size chip, but with very high efficiency, and the other is a larger chip but with lower efficiency. So it's a case of mixing and choosing the camera to suit the target.
So what makes the difference between these CCD cameras and a normal camera, like the SLR camera?
Well, there are significant differences. I mean, if you compare the detector technology, they have a common heritage. They share a common heritage, but where they divide, a DSLR is a mass-produced sensor, mm-hmm. which has a matrix of colour filters that takes colour pictures, because that's what people want to do, quite rightly. Mm-hmm. And if you go into the other branch, the CCD camera, they're generally monochrome cameras, so they only take images of shades of grey, black and white, and to produce colour pictures we need to use colour filters, and that can either be red, green and blue filters or narrow band filters such as hydrogen alpha, oxygen 3 and sulphur 2, for example. But a significant difference is that not only do we have the flexibility by using coloured filters with monochrome cameras, but we also have the cameras cooled. So what happens is electronic detectors in DSLRs and CCDs generate a certain amount of noise, for example, unwanted signal during the course of a 5 or 10 minute exposure. So what we have to do, we cool the CCD camera, because for every 8 degrees reduction in operating temperature for the sensor in the camera, mm-hmm. that halves the electronic noise. So when I'm working from home, in the winter time, I can run my CCD camera at a temperature of below minus 30. And that really does withhold this electronic noise from building up. Yeah. Now, DSLR doesn't have that luxury. So what it means is that you're limited, particularly working in a warm location like the UK in the summer,
yeah.
you'll find that the electronic noise will become quite apparent within 2 or 3 minutes of exposures, whereas my own cameras can go on for, you know, 40-minute exposures or something like that without too much problem from this dark current that afflicts the exposures. But don't forget, DSLRs, you can buy them for incredibly good prices now. The sensors are large. They're very high quality sensors, and you know, the cameras are really well priced, and they're very suitable for astronomy, but you're limited by the kind of targets you can go for. They're very susceptible to light pollution. They're not so user friendly, for example, with narrowband filters, whereas with a dedicated monochrome camera, they're perfect recording instruments. They're really sort of great.
You've talked a little bit about how you could do the dark frames to remove mm-hmm. noise, but I mean, what other sort of software processes can you do? I mean, what do you do when you process your images?
Well, I mean, the start of any good image is the calibration frames that I've talked about, the dark frames, the flat frames, and the bias. I mean, that is CCD nuts and bolts. That has to be done, and then you just move on from that point once you've got that data. But then you can use software to open your black and white image, for example, that's been taken through colour filters. The first thing you would do would be to combine those into a colour image. And there's all sorts of software that can do that, but my favourite of all of that is Adobe Photoshop, which is a desktop editing package for everyday photography and design and graphics, this kind of stuff. But it's tailor-made for astronomy as well.
Hmm.
So you can combine your colour images using, you know, one of several techniques in Photoshop. But what's even better than that is that you can use Photoshop's advanced filters, its filtering algorithms, to start to extract the detail that is contained within your images but maybe hidden by, for example, the poor seeing, the poor quality of the atmosphere. And it's great fun to do. It allows you to put a personal stamp on an image. And one thing I always say at the talks that I do is that if there was 50 people in the audience and they were all CCD images, I could say to them, give them all a copy of the same image, like a galaxy or something like that, tell them to go away and then come back a week later and show me how they'd processed it, and you could almost guarantee that every one of those would be slightly different in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to keep the sky background a little bit brighter than jet black because it shows you all the edge contours of galaxies and nebulae. Some people like the sky to be absolutely jet black. The colour combination is a very subjective thing. If we're imaging galaxies, we try to keep it objective rather than subjective. But once we go into narrowband imaging with hydrogen alpha filters and others, you're creating what's to all intents and purposes a false colour image. So you can stamp your own personality on the images in that sense. You can use colour palettes that you like and, you know, other people haven't used and this kind of stuff. So it's quite a personal thing, but the software's out there. There's free software. There's a free equivalent of Photoshop called GIMP,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I think it was originally written for Linux, but you know, it's filtered into the sort of Windows operating system, and you can download that. It's very, very heavily featured. And there's all sorts of intermediate programs that you can use for different, you know, generally plugins, for example, for Photoshop that can deal with light pollution in your images and, you know, colour registration. There's some, you know, people are writing this software all day long, and there's a good choice of that sort of stuff.
So how much are these sort of, as an entry level sort of CCD, if someone did want to sort of move from the SLR to that level of amateur?
They vary in cost. I mean, there's a couple of companies in the UK that produce high quality cameras for very reasonable prices. So whenever I get asked that question, which I do get asked a lot after the talks that I do, people are quite keen to start out. One thing I'd normally say to people is you're better off perhaps starting with a DSLR.
Yeah.
Put that on your telescope and your mounting system and get used to things like auto-guiding and focusing and stuff like that, because a lot of people have already got a DSLR camera for their day-to-day sort of family use, this kind of stuff. So we'd always recommend starting with that, and if you're happy with the results and you want to go a step further, you can buy what we can call entry-level cameras for probably about £500, I think, at the first entry-level camera.
Okay.
And then you know, they're good quality cameras. You know, you can do very good work with these. And they do colour cameras as well as monochrome, but as I said earlier, I would recommend monochrome cameras, although that, of course, means investing in a filter
mm-hmm.
set and a filter wheel of some sort, preferably motorised, just to streamline the whole process. So then, once you've done that, if you're happy with the results and you then wish to improve, then you can start. Basically, with CCD cameras, the more you pay, the better you tend to get. So you'll find you're going up towards larger chips, larger sensors within the cameras. higher efficiency sensors, there may be better cooling, for example, all this kind of stuff. But there's definitely a learning curve there, and you may be limited by budgetary constraints. I mean, you can really get a full astrophotography rig for probably about altogether for about £1,400. So that's a mounting system, a telescope, a camera, and an auto-guiding camera, which takes care of all of the fine tracking.
Okay, so it's quite an investment, but
it is. Yeah,
it's doable.
What we find is that very few people actually go in at that level. They start simple and then just work upwards, and if they like the hobby, because some people get into the hobby and don't enjoy it. You know, the endless cloudy nights, the moonlight, all this kind of stuff, it does stop you from flowing along in the hobby, certainly. But what you find is that people who enjoy the hobby will then look to upgrade, and that'll be the telescope mount, even the telescope itself, and certainly the camera. And then you can pay anything up to. The mid-range cameras like I use are typically £3,000 to £4,000 each, something like that. So expensive, a serious outlay, but you get what you pay for in that field, certainly. So, you know, the results do show, you do see a big improvement in performance once you start going up to these high-end cameras.
Okay, well, moving on to sort of a bit more about the sort of the history of what you've done, because you said you worked out in La Palma, and I heard that you started helping out with things like the William Herschel telescope. So how did that come about?
That was really exciting. What happened was we went out to La Palma initially to find a place to observe without light pollution. So I went out there as an amateur astronomer and was very lucky to meet a person who's become a very good friend, who was actually an instrumentation engineer on the three UK scopes. And he opened a huge amount of doors for us. He got us permission to work at the observatory. And because we've been doing it every year, they know that we're fairly serious about what we do. We understand the sort of protocols involved with working from these locations. You know, you can't go around with car lights on or, you know, torches or anything. You have to adhere very carefully to the professional standards. But we do that because we're serious about what we do. And we built up a very good working reputation with a lot of the regular staff there. And I'd do a lot of public relations work for them. I shoot the telescopes in the daytime, shoot the telescopes at night, come back and give talks in the UK and spread the word really about the great work that's being done by UK and other, it's a multinational site on La Palma, other astronomers that are there. So then they understood that I was very keen on the image processing side of CCD imaging. So it's a 50-50 thing. The first 50% is actually acquiring the data, and then the second 50% is going into your bedroom or something with a computer and then just actually, you know, working with image processing techniques to actually extract the very maximum detail from your images.
Yeah.
And then after that, they understood that I was very keen on image processing. I've worked with other projects in the UK, and they said, we've got these what we call public relations images. They were shot with cameras for trial purposes to see how the cameras are performing. They had a large archive of images that people had taken in the past and never bothered going back to. So they said, would you be interested in applying sort of the image processing to our images? So I said, well, yes. And without a shadow of a doubt, the quality of the images they're getting out there were absolutely first rate. You know, the sky conditions are fantastic, the instrumentation's great. It's a world-class site. So it was easy. You know, to process their images was simple because you're not dealing with light pollution and other problems. You're just dealing with very high quality data. So that took up a couple of years working with different data from different telescopes of the three UK scopes out there. And it's actually gone into other departments as well. Astronomers have come into La Palma, you know, done an imaging run and then disappeared and then got back to me and said, well, I've got my data, would you have a look at that for me? And yeah, well, of course I will. And it's got a bit quiet at the moment, but it sort of tends to go in fits and bursts. So it's just, the point I'm trying to put across here is it's easier to process their data than it is to process my own, because I'm dealing with the problems with light pollution and poor seeing and all this kind of stuff. So it's a pleasure to do that for them, and they've reciprocated by allowing us to go out there. They give us facilities to work in with their own equipment every year, you know, in a really fantastic site. So it's a great working relationship, I think.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky to get involved with that. Sounds pretty amazing. Yeah, so thank you very much for talking to me today. And I hope your talk goes really well.
Thanks. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. Hopefully show you what we've been talking about
here. Yeah, I'll actually get to see the images. Yeah, so yeah, that'd be exciting
to get through. So yeah, thanks very much.